That's amazing. What an incredible story, eh? Isn't that just so good to hear from these three guys? So excited to baptize them shortly. And I just love baptisms in general. I love the fog machines. I love the lights. I'm a sucker for a fog machine, you know? Just gets me going. I love being able to let the hair down a little bit, celebrate with these guys. I remember after a baptism service a few months ago, we made a video to show what it looked like, and I thought it looked sick, so I showed my housemates, and I was expecting them to be like, oh my days, your church is so sick, I've got to go there right now, it's a Tuesday, I don't care, take me. But actually, their response was more like, it's a bit weird. Why celebrate so much? You're just baptizing someone, what's the big deal? And they couldn't really understand why we celebrate so much, why make a big deal? And wrapped up in that question, Is this bigger question of what is there to celebrate? What is the good news? Because actually, for many of us, that can be a real challenge. Maybe you walked in here tonight, and on the way you passed a guy that's sleeping rough. And as you walk in, you're sat asking, how can we sing songs about how good God is when outside there's a guy who hasn't got a home? Or maybe for you, you look at the world around you, the refugee crisis, climate change, poverty, inequality, and you say, how can we sit and worship God and celebrate when there is chaos outside? Or maybe it's a personal thing. Maybe it's something that's closer to home. I know for myself, a few years ago, I was just in a time of kind of grieving and mourning, and I sat at the back of a church service, kind of very similar to this, on the floor with my back against the wall, just angry at God. Just really, really angry, thinking, how can these people worship God? How can they celebrate and jump around when this is happening to me? And that's a big question to ask. Or maybe for you, it's not a question of God. Maybe you're good with the God thing, but actually church just feels like playing the violin on the Titanic. That actually, we're in this lovely science museum. It's great. It's, you know, it's shiny and nice. But outside, there's so much pain that what are we actually doing here? These are big questions, and they're questions that Jesus had to answer as well. So if we're going to celebrate, I think it's important that first we do a bit of digging for ourselves. Jesus, this guy, I'm sure you've heard of him, he wandered around the Near East about 2,000 years ago. And he lived a kind of nomadic life. He would go from town to town, healing people, doing miracles, that sort of thing, preaching the good news. And he would stay in friends' houses. He would find people that would put him up and stay there overnight. And after a while, we start to see some recurring characters in this story. We start to see people like Mary and Martha popping up over and over again. These two sisters who kind of became really good friends of Jesus, along with their brother Lazarus. And they would host Jesus. They would be party to seeing these miracles that he did. They had this kind of special status with Jesus, which is why it was kind of confusing when Lazarus, their brother, fell ill. Jesus found out the news, and yet he kind of didn't do what you'd expect. You'd expect Lazarus is ill, he's in a really bad way. You'd expect Jesus to be like, right, that's it, we're going straight away, I'm going to go heal him. But actually, he says to his disciples, let's just hang where we are for a few days. So they wander around Judea for a little longer. He does a few more miracles, that sort of thing. And then finally, he says, after Lazarus has actually died, he says, all right, let's go. Let's head to Bethany where Lazarus was. And this is almost a kind of a strange response to pain, right? That you would have thought Jesus would just head straight there, but instead he turns up. And by the time that he turns up, Lazarus has already been dead for a while, and we're left with some questions. Luckily, a guy called John, a friend of Jesus, was kind of there for the whole thing, an eyewitness, and he wrote down what he saw. And we read it in his book in chapter 11. And he's explaining the scene that Jesus arrives into. He says, on his arrival, Jesus found that Lazarus had already been in the tomb for 4 days. 4 days. It's not a little bit late. It's not stuck in traffic. It's 4 days. And now Bethany was less than 2 miles from Jerusalem, and many Jews had come to Martha and Mary to comfort them in the loss of their brothers. Even the Jews from Jerusalem had got there before Jesus. Surely they were asking, we got here before Jesus, really? Where is he? And so it goes on and says, when Martha, one of the sisters, heard that Jesus was coming, she went out to meet him, but Mary stayed at home. Lord, Martha said to her, to Jesus, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. The question that maybe we ask in our lives a lot is, Jesus, where are you? Jesus, where are you in the depths of my anxiety? Jesus, where are you when my dad walked out? Jesus, where are you when life gets tough? That's a big question for us to answer, and it's one that her sister asks again later. And we read on, and it says, when Mary reached the place where Jesus was, she saw him, she fell at his feet and said, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Jesus, where are you? Where are you in my pain? Where are you when I need you most? It says, when Jesus saw her weeping, and the Jews who had come along with her also weeping, he was deeply moved in spirit and troubled. Where have you laid him? He asked. Come and see, Lord, they replied. So, here's the question. What is Jesus going to do? This guy, he's the savior of the world. He's been walking around performing miracles, healing people, and yet he's let his friend die, and he's watching these two sisters grieve. Actually, his response, I hope, for me, this changes the way that I look at God. When I see the way that Jesus responds to the situation, it honestly reframes everything that I think about him. It's such a tiny, short response, but it's so incredibly powerful because it simply says, Jesus wept. Jesus wept. That when Jesus saw the suffering of Martha, of Mary, of Lazarus, that he wept. The creator of the universe, I imagine he's kneeling down on the floor next to Martha as she kneels, and he weeps. Maybe that is what you need to see today. Maybe for you, that's enough to convince you. Maybe you just need to know that when life gets tough, when the going gets tough, that Jesus weeps with you. Today, today's been a tough day for me, and we got some bad news, and this for me was everything. That I knew that in my pain that Jesus is there weeping with me. That when there's no words to say, that Jesus weeps. And for some of the guys, that was enough. The Jews said, see how he loved him. Maybe that's what you need to know tonight, that see how Jesus loves you, that he weeps with you. This is an incredibly powerful picture of who God is. This Jesus, that he would come and in all his power and all his glory, he would come, kneel down and weep with you. The things that cause you pain, the things that cause you anguish, he feels them too. And he sits down and he weeps. But actually, maybe for some of us, that's not enough. Maybe for some of us, we need more than that. Because there's some guys, some of them said, could not he who opened the eyes of the blind man have kept this man from dying? They're asking the question, could not he who performed these miracles, he who did these incredible things, he's walking around healing blind men, making a lame man get up and walk, could he not have saved his brother? It's a really good question, right? It's a really good question. Could he not have saved Martha and Mary's brother? Surely, if we're going to follow God, surely if we're going to say, yeah, it's worth getting baptized, it's worth committing ourselves for, we need more than just a God who is emotionally available to us. Surely we need more than just a God who knows what it feels to be in pain. I need a God that can act. And the story goes on, and it says that Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb. It was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. This doesn't really help me. I don't know. What do you think of when you hear deeply moved? For me, My personal opinion is I read that and I'm like, it's hippie Jesus, right? It's Jesus walking up to the grave and being like, oh man, just deeply moved right now. It's like, it's emo Jesus. It's Jesus finding himself on a beach in Thailand. It's breakdancing Jesus on Stokes Croft. You know that one? I like that Jesus. That Jesus could be a friend. That Jesus could be someone I hang out with. But I need more than that. I need more than just a God who's like emotionally connected, who's deeply moved, who weeps with me. I need a God who can actually do something, which is kind of good, because actually that word deeply moved, it's not a great translation. A lot of New Testament scholars agree that it's really hard to translate this word, embrimomenos. And actually what that means, when you translate it literally, is bellowed with rage. That Jesus walks up to the tomb of Lazarus. He stares down the tomb where his friend Lazarus is laid. And he bellows with rage. He's not just passive. He's not just willing to watch it slide. He stares down death and pain, and he is furious. I imagine it's kind of in like one of those cheesy film moments where suddenly the superhero all at once just lets out a big scream. It's like, ah! I don't know if you've seen Hot Fuzz when the guy's lying on the ground like, ah, da, da. Yeah, it's like that. It's that, ah! It's a furious anger at this injustice, at this pain, except it's not just like a cheesy movie. This is real. This is Jesus standing before death, standing before the things that cause us pain, and he is furious. I kind of need that, because for me, my response often to tragedy, I think you look at the world around and headlines and things like that, and it's easy to become quite numb. It's easy to sort of, just switch off, because it's headline after headline, tragedy after tragedy, and I just kind of let it wash over me after a while. But not Jesus. When he sees the injustice, when he sees this pain, this death, he is furious with it. I love that we see that in Pharaoh's story as well. That he shared that he was kind of in this dark place where he felt disconnected with God, disconnected from himself. And in that place, God wasn't passive. God wasn't just emotional. Actually, God came and he found him. God was active. God was living. God was chasing Pharaoh down, pulling him back to him. That's the God that I need in my situations. That's the God who isn't just going to stand by and watch things happen. He is furious at the things that cause us pain. Jesus bellows with rage at injustice. And it goes on, and it gets even better. It says, they took the stone away the stone. Then Jesus looked up and said, Father, I thank you that you have heard me. I knew that you always hear me, but I said this for the benefit of the people standing here, that they may believe that you sent me. When he had said this, Jesus called out in a loud voice, Lazarus, come out. Lazarus, come out. Jamie is... story is just an amazing picture of this, right? Jamie, in a coma for 10 days. I wasn't actually at Metro at the time when this was going on. I came down a couple of months after, but as soon as I arrived at Metro, it was like all anyone would talk about. Have you heard what happened with Jamie? Have you heard this story? Because he's had this horrendous kind of heart problems and respiratory problems and stroke. He's in a coma. The doctors have absolutely no idea how to wake him up. There is no medical way, no matter what they try, to wake him up. And at the end of a service about a year ago, Kate comes on the stage here and says, we're going to pray for Jamie now. And she doesn't just pray. When Kate prays, she prays. Anyone who was there would know. She starts off praying, and soon she's getting more and more bellowing with rage at this injustice that's happening until she is shouting at the top of her lungs, wake up, Jamie, wake up. Wake up, Jamie, wake up. Wake up, Jamie. And sure enough, 3 days later, despite all medical knowledge, despite anything the doctor said, Jamie miraculously wakes up and starts walking. Can we clap that again? I mean, that's amazing. And it's the same that we see here with Lazarus. Lazarus, Jesus comes to the tomb of Lazarus, and just with those simple words, Lazarus, come out. This dead man, this dead man gets up and starts walking. This is incredible. There's like an old preacher saying, which I think is really cool. It says, if Jesus had to call Lazarus by name, because if he didn't, everybody in that tomb would have got up and started walking. Which I think is pretty cool. But it's true, right? That we see this extraordinary power that raises Lazarus from the dead, that brings Jamie back from the death. That with a few words, Jesus can take a dead man and have them walking. And this is the promise that we have. Actually, it's a promise that Jesus makes at the very start of this whole story. The disciples come to Jesus and tell him about Lazarus, and his response is, this sickness will not end in death. This sickness will not end in death. That despite the pain and the difficulty we see around us, that it will not end in death. That despite the fact that Jamie's in a coma for 10 days, this will not end in death. That despite the fact that Farai felt far from God, that this will not end in death. That despite the fact that Lucy had no idea about church or about God, that God called her and said, come, find out, receive life in its fullness, because Jesus promises us that it will not end in death. And honestly, as I say this, that's what I'm holding on to right now. That no matter what's going on, that no matter where I am, no matter how real the sickness feels, no matter how true it seems in my life, when I can't see anything else, I know that it will not end in death. Because I believe that Jesus weeps with me. I believe that Jesus, he moves. He's not passive. He isn't indifferent to our problems. He's furious at the things that cause us pain. And he is powerful to change them. That with a few words, he can raise us up to life. I think this is the Christian truth that we hold on to. If you're new to church, if you're just coming along for the first time, this is what it comes down to. That no matter where the world is, no matter what's going on in our life, we know that the sickness will not end in death because we have Jesus on our side. And that's when we're baptizing these guys. I mean, Jamie, Farai, Lucy, they'll tell you that they're not doing it in ignorance of the pain in the world. When you ask that question, how can we sit in church and sing songs to God when there's so much hardship going on outside? They're not getting baptized completely ignorant of the stuff that's going on in the world. They will tell you, I'm aware of the pain. I know what it's like to be in difficulty, but it's because of Jesus that I can stand there and say, I have life in all its fullness. And so the baptism is a sign of that. They're saying in front of all of us that no matter what happens, that no matter what the world throws at us, we know that Jesus promised us that when he says, wake up, we can wake up into the fullness of life. And it could end there, and we could baptize the guys, and don't worry, we will soon. I know you're itching to go, but there is one little detail that I don't want us to miss of this story, because it's a little thing that John kind of drops in there, but I think it's incredibly important to why we do what we're doing here, what this is all about. Because he says, the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and a cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let them go. Take off the grave clothes and let them go. You've got this mummy walking out of a tomb. I imagine that mummies have always been the same. So imagine a mummy in like the movies in the 90s. That guy walking out of the tomb, Lazarus wrapped in linen, stumbling around. And it could have been Jesus just raised from the dead. He could have like clicked his fingers, the grave clothes fall off, that's the end of that. But instead, Jesus turns to his disciples and friends and says, unwrap the grave clothes. Now, a bit of context as to why this is a bigger deal than it sounds. In those days, it's a hot country that they're walking around in. Dead bodies tend to smell quite a lot after a while, so they would wrap up these bodies in really kind of sticky spices. They would kind of lay them down and wrap them in linen once they'd got the spices on them to try and stop some of the smell. But obviously, after 4 days, you can imagine The body's starting to decompose. Things are getting a little bit smelly. So when Jesus says, take off the linens, it's not just like doing the laundry. This is a kind of disgusting job. This is going to be a horrible little thing. And as they take off more and more grave clothes, it gets more and more disgusting. As you get closer to where the rotting was, it just gets stinkier and stinkier. It's kind of horrible. But this is a picture of what God calls us to do. That God says to each of us, there's things in life that stop us looking like who God calls us to be. Jesus calls us to get up and start walking, but actually there's grave clothes that still cling to us. There's brokenness, there's addiction, there's pain. And what we need is a community around us that is willing to get smelly. A community around us is willing to take off those grave clothes. And if you are someone who's just come for the first time tonight, or maybe you're having a look around, and maybe you have the impression that Christians are happy and they have it all sorted and it's all good, but I can't really be a Christian because I am none of those things. Okay, Christians, can you close your ears for a second? I'm going to speak to everyone in the room who's kind of new to this. The truth is, we're all pretty smelly. But actually, I can guarantee you, there are some smelly... I work with Philip. He's the leader of the church. He should be... You would have thought he'd be the least smelly amongst us. But when it comes to this stuff, we've all got a long way to go, right? And actually, that's what real community is. That we're willing to stick by each other. That even when it sucks, even when it's hard, we promise that we'll help each other work out what it means to live life to its fullest. For me, it means that I have a bunch of guys, two guys that I meet up with every couple of weeks. We're meeting for like 4 or 5 years now. And I'd love to say that it's always been that thing that you want it to be, where it's open and honest and you can share kind of what's really going on. But truthfully, that was never really me. I was a rock when they first met me emotionally. I kind of wasn't able to say anything about myself really that really was private or in any way vulnerable. So we would kind of spend these times talking together and praying, and they would tell me all of their secret sin, all of it. It would take hours, and then it would come to me and they'd be like, Sam, what's going on with you? And I'd be like, oh, I'm fine. Don't worry about it. It's all good. I'm fine. Let's just pray for you guys. It's all good. And every week, it'd be the same thing. Not because I'm fine, because like I said, we all smell. But I was terrified of being vulnerable. I was terrified that if they really knew me, that they wouldn't like what they found. And so I was just kind of closed off. But week by week, these guys continued to take the grave clothes off. They made a commitment to me that I promise you I will walk with you, Sam. We'll do whatever it takes to help you find what it means to live life in its fullness. I look back on those hours that we spent where they would be open and vulnerable and I would sit there like a rock, and I thank God for them, because the grave clothes just came off and off and off. And for Jamie, I mean, it's similar. Jamie shared with us, actually, this is a really big example of, he had no memory of life before his trauma. He had no idea what it means to kind of to be alive beyond the fact that he was. And week by week, he would come to Metro and there'd be people here who would help him take the grave clothes off. He said, I loved what Jamie shared when he said, Jesus saved me, but Metro, I found a place to belong, a home, a community of people that are saying, we're willing to do the hard yards. We're willing to walk with you. That's so powerful. Part of our vision statement is that we want to be a church where we can help people find Jesus and love one another, then follow Jesus and serve our city. And it's not just the find Jesus bit is super important. But actually, we've also got to help each other. What does it mean for us to love one another? What does it mean to love one another when things get a little smelly? What does it mean for us to actually follow Jesus? What does it mean for us to actually live life the way that he wants us to? And that's why what Jesus says when he says, take the grave clothes off, is so important, because that's what we're here to do. We're here to help each other work that out for ourselves. And so Luce is in our hub, our French A hub, massive. And we make a commitment, a big cheer from the French A hub there, the rowdy lot at the back. We make a commitment to Luce that actually we're gonna continue to walk with you. We continue to work out for you. What does it mean for you to live life in all its fullness? And Farai's mentor. So for me, I make the commitment to you that I will help you. I will walk with you. I commit to you to say, what does it mean for you to take the grave clothes off, to live life in all its fullness? This is the reason we exist, to help people find Jesus, but then also to love one another, to follow Jesus, to serve our city. And that is why it's amazing we get to baptize people. That is why the church isn't just an afterthought, isn't just some playing the violin on the Titanic. Actually, we get to make an enormous difference in the lives of the people around us. Because we're not just saying there's nothing wrong with the world. We're not just sitting there being ignorant of the problems. We're saying that we know it's hard, that we know it's difficult, but there is a God who loves us. There's a Jesus who weeps with us. That he is on our side, that he fights our battles. And that in him we find life in all its fullness. We find life more than we could ever imagine. And we have a community that helps us work that out. That's really exciting, right? That's cool. So that's what we're going to celebrate now. In a minute, we're going to head over to your left. And we're going to baptize these three guys in the order that their videos played. But for now, I'm going to pray. And then we're going to go for it. Yeah, God, we thank you so much that you are not distant, that you are not passive, that God, you care deeply about us, that you weep when we weep, that you fight our battles for us. God, we thank you that we are following a God who with one word can bring a dead man back to life. And that's what we want for ourselves. And so we make a commitment to you and to one another to work out what does it mean to live life in all its fullness with you. Amen.